Good morning. I'm delighted to welcome you to this service of dedication for the Ori Miller Hall of Nations, the beginning of which you see above you here, the flags here. I'm Gloria Rhodes. I teach peace building at EMU in the graduate and the undergraduate. And for today and every day, I serve as director of the Ori Miller Center. The center is a center without walls, and so it seems fitting that this place is an acknowledgement of our namesake, that we're honoring Ori Miller with a Hall of Nations. The center that I direct supports the engagement of undergraduate students with some of the themes that were very important to Ori Miller, things like Christian mission, peace, development, economics, business, and humanitarian service. As such, it supports student travel to conferences, it supports events on campus, that sort of thing. The Ori Miller Center is partnering with the Anabaptist Center for Religion and Society, with the Multicultural and International Student Services Office, and the Graduate and Professional School to dedicate this space this morning. For me, this service is one of gratitude. It's gratitude for leaders like Ori Miller, who came before us and who challenged us to look beyond our fields and our walls and our towns out into the world and to see and engage people of the world. It seems very fitting to me to honor his contribution to us by raising the flags of many nations. We're going to be hearing more about Ori Miller's contribution and also how this space, how this came to be in a moment with contributions from Lee Yoder and Edgar, our guest Edgar Stace. But this is also a time for gratitude for the students, faculty, and staff of EMU who engage in these themes in the United States and throughout the world, and for the international students who have come to us at EMU. So thank you very much for those of you who engage the types of themes that we're talking about here every day in the classroom, on campus, with students, off campus in cross-culturals, and I see many of you have been engaged in that kind of work. Thank you very much. And lastly, I want to thank especially the people who made possible these flags. I'm deeply grateful to the donors who sponsored flags for the display. And if you're here, I would like you to stand, please. Let us recognize you and thank you for sponsoring a flag here. Thank you. If you are noticing that a flag is not present that you wish was here, there are some that have not yet been sponsored. And especially for those of you, we are aware that there are a few students on campus, undergraduate students and graduate students who are here, who do not have a flag representing them present. Students, ask your faculty members and your mentors and these people here if they will sponsor a flag on your behalf. And if you have interest in sponsoring a flag, you can contact Susanna Lepley, who's going to be speaking in a moment, or you can simply go to the EMU webpage and search on Ori Miller Hall of Nations or just Hall of Nations. The sponsorship form comes up. This is not an advertisement, but it's a $90 sponsorship. Finally, the service of gratitude for me also extends to those who've helped make this physically possible, and I'm going to turn this part over to Susanna Lepley, Director of Multicultural and International Student Services, for a few more acknowledgments. Thank you very much.
There are some very key people without which this would not have happened, and I'm going to ask them to stand up as I mention their name. Arnold Driediger, are you here? He made sure, he has his hand up over there, he made sure that he designed the space, how far the flags would be apart from each other, etc. Ben Bailey, is he here? Stand up. He ordered all of the flags, made sure that we got as many as possible here on time. Thank you, Ben. And then we can't not mention Lee Yoder, whose idea this all was. So without Lee, we wouldn't be here today either. And then Jim Smucker sponsored the idea with the cabinet. Also, other folks from Fizz Plant, Eldon Kurtz, Tony Brenneman, Kent Yoder, Henry Bowser, David Emsweiler, David Vogel from the theater department, as well as my incredible supervisor, Ken L. Nafziger. Thank you very much, everyone.
In an educational program, from kindergarten to the highest levels of graduate programs, we teach and we pursue critical thinking, investigation, inquiry, problem solving, writing, which is another way of thinking, and research. Throughout this land and around the world, this is done. At EMU, we offer an American educational program, yes, but in a global context. This new Oreo Miller Hall of Nations gives visibility to the global context in which we teach and work. These national flags serve to welcome those learners who come to this campus to study and to enrich our lives. The national flags serve also to demonstrate the global destinations of EMU students in the pursuit of a distinctive, life-changing cross-cultural program, which is central to the core values of this university. Now, this idea of a Hall of Nations has deep roots, and I'll share them with you. Because in the 1990s, when I was the academic dean at nearby Bridgewater College, I organized the first use of international flags included in the commencement processional there. In 2008, as the founding superintendent of Narmer American College in Cairo, Egypt, we used international flags in our processionals to Verdi's music, the triumphal march from the opera Aida, which was a fitting cultural touch. Then again, as head of the school of the American School in Vietnam in 2012, we used international flags at the opening convocation processional for a new school year with the participation of the United States Consulate in Ho Chi Minh City. Now, it's the time for international flags to become a part of EMU's educational mission, which it too has deep roots in the first cross-cultural programs. I had the privilege of helping to launch the Global Village curriculum with the late Dr. Albert N. Kime. He was also a 1963 college classmate of mine, both history majors, vying for the A's from John A. Lapp, which were few and far between. And then as a colleague when he was EMU's vice president and academic dean. For Al Kime was also a PAX man in Europe after World War II, just like Dr. Irvi Glick, professor emeritus of German, just like Harold F. Miller, now in Nairobi, but really here today, Omer Lapp, who served PAX in Greece, and the late Dr. Lois Gundon Clemens, Lansdale, Pennsylvania, formerly previously of Goshen, who served PAX in France, and many other persons as well. The worldwide PAX program was launched by Oreo Miller, with the gifted vision and dynamic leadership of Dr. Calvin W. Redicop, who is also with us here today, and others. With this new Ori O. Miller Hall of Nations, we see before us more than 50 flags contributed by many persons who wanted to be a part of this venture. We now have a visible international center to welcome and to affirm. To reach 100 flags, which is our goal, we invite others to sponsor an international flag of their choice. See Susanna Lepley or myself at your convenience. And now what we want to do is we want to hear about this 20th century leader, Ori O. Miller, from a person, Edgar Stace, from Pennsylvania, who worked with Ori Miller. Edgar is originally from Minnesota, and he worked over 30 years in Mennonite Central Committee in Akron, Pennsylvania, in various leadership capacities. After his remarks, President Lawrence Schwarzenegger will have a prayer and dedication for this hall. Thank you, Edgar, for coming today, being part of this leadership conference, and telling us, who is this man, Ori Miller?
I am honored to be here today for this happy occasion. And I take note of the flags, and I will venture to guess that Ori Miller had been to most of them, probably could have found them on the map, probably would have known the capital of the country and something of its culture. You couldn't have chosen better than to honor Ori Miller with this naming this after him. Now, I know that you have varying degrees of involvement. Many of you were born after Ori Miller died. For me, my first year at Mennonite Central Committee was his last year as executive secretary. So we had just 1 year of overlap in his official function. But he continued yet for another 10 years or so in many miscellaneous roles, and I was involved with him in many of these. Now, those of you who are not as familiar, I want to make sure that you get the name correct. We're not talking here about Oreo cookies. We're talking about Ori, O-R-I-E, Otis Miller, the son of a Mennonite bishop and farmer, graduate of a little Mennonite college in northern Indiana, many things could be said about him. In the first biography that was written of him many years ago, it was said that he had seen more of the world than Marco Polo. He had opened more mission fields than David Livingston. He was as innovative in church ministries as Thomas Edison was in the field of technology. He was the most remarkable Mennonite of our generation and maybe of this century. As already said, he grew up on that farm in northern Indiana, and he went to that little Mennonite school and graduated there with a degree in business and English language. There he met and later married a woman who was the only child of the shoe factory owner in Akron, Pennsylvania. And so after marriage, he went to work as a salesman in that shoe factory and eventually was drawn into management. About the time that he was pulling his weight, he got an idea. He was concerned about the suffering that was happening in Europe following the First World War. And he asked for a leave of absence, which was very reluctantly granted. He went and served there, and there he acquired some skills and some experience that you will see later how all of it fits together in God's plan. The atmosphere was a little frosty when he left, and they weren't at all sure that there would be a position for him when he came back. But Then he heard, he finished that term of service, came back, and very quickly the Mennonites were having problems. Well, the Mennonites in Russia were suffering with starvation, and they were looking for somebody who could go there. So who better than Ori Miller? And of course, he brought with it was at that time also that they resurrected the idea of a central committee. He had worked for six committees when he was worked before, and he said he would go out and serve on one condition, and that was that there would be a central committee. And now you know why we have that glorious name, Mennonite Central Committee. Well, on that trip to Russia, they went out, the three of them, but only two came back. You know the story of Clayton Kratz and how he was lost on that mission. Ori returned, and yes, he was permitted back into the factory, and he went to work selling shoes. We're now in the Depression, and during the Depression, Ori Miller made enough money in selling shoes that he built the biggest house in Akron, and he bought a big Packard car, and his life seemed to be set for being a good business executive. Well, he also, during that time, with his family, they had five children, and life seemed to be set. Then World War II came, and the leaders saw the need that there would be for some kind of organization. And who better than this central committee and this man, Ori Miller? So MCC was taken off the shelf at where it had been placed because they thought it would no longer be needed. So Mennonite Central Committee was put in place. Ori Miller was put in charge. And the rest is almost the story of a dream of all the things that were accomplished. Under Ori's direction, they put into place a mechanism that administered the program of civilian public service. 5,000 men, Mennonite men, served their alternate service under that program. They also launched a huge relief program that saved untold number of lives. They resettled 5,000 refugees, four big shipload of refugees to Paraguay, and they inspired a national mental health movement, including four Mennonite mental hospitals, including those in Maryland, Kansas, Indiana, and California. So things were really happening. MCC had become a household name. You'd think that was enough. Now, Ori he kept his feet in the shoe business, but he was giving most of his time to the Mennonite Central Committee. But it was only half the story, because at the time he was doing all of this, he awakened within the Lancaster Conference, which was one of the more insular and a larger and conservative of the Mennonite conferences, and excited them about world mission. And out of that came large, robust churches in Ethiopia, Tanzania, Vietnam, Honduras, and elsewhere. And all of this was happening in one lifetime. We saw it all on display at the Mennonite World Conference in Harrisburg this summer. All the while, he kept a finger in the shoe business. Well, maybe more than a finger. He made a point always to show up on days when the dividends would be distributed. And that permitted him to serve gratis. Mennonite Central Committee or Eastern Board never gave the man a salary or even an office. He served pro bono and out of a little office in his home. His office had only one picture, the ocean waves, and one interview desk beside a medium-sized desk, one chair beside a medium-sized desk. That's what his office was. And it was from that little office that he was able to direct so much. So all this was happening, and you'd say, well, what did he do in his spare time? Well, I'll tell you what he did. He organized Mennonite. He was the main person, always working with others, but he was the main spark plug that brought into being Mennonite Mutual Aid, now known as Everence. He brought into being the Mennonite Mental Health Services, now known as Mennonite Health Alliance, And he laid the groundwork for Mennonite Economic Development Associates, the largest membership organization in the Mennonite Church, and serving in a great worldwide ministry, even as we're honoring here. So all of this superhuman effort was happening in one lifetime. A wise man once said, "Do not seek to follow the footsteps of wise, seek what they sought." So what was it that made possible this superhuman effort that we celebrate here today? I will name just five. He was intelligent, borderline brilliant. He was disciplined. He went about his work with intense, laser-like focus that was brought to bear on the issue at hand. I was with him once in an assignment where he was asked to bring a morning message in a mission church. He said, "No, I'm not here on a preaching assignment. I'm here on another assignment. I'll give a word of testimony, but preaching, no. That's not my assignment here today," illustrating his focus. He was especially gifted in administration. And if we know anything about administration, it is the ability to work with others and get things done through others. Here was a church leader who knew how to read a balance sheet. He did the work of the church with the skills that he learned in business. MBA majors, are you listening? Here is your hero. He brought those skills from business. I venture to say that other church leaders could not have accomplished. He was able to accomplish these because of the business skills that he brought with him. But most of all, of the five that I will name, most of all, he was solidly grounded in his Christian and Anabaptist faith. That was the foundation of it all. He read his Bible every year. He knelt by his bed to pray every night. He gave priority to the church and the Mennonite church in particular. His mantra was, if the church asks you to do something, you do it unless you have a very good reason not to do it. That was his common reply. Was he without fault? Did he have his critics? Yes. Some thought him too austere. I did not. I'll illustrate. When I walked to my office in the morning, I walked by his breakfast table that overlooked the street. And he had been gone for several weeks. We always checked with each other as I walked by his window. This one day, he had been gone. Now he was back at his breakfast table. And when he saw me coming by his window, he jumped out of the breakfast table with both hands in the air and welcomed. He said, "I'm back." And, you know, this is the man many accused of as being too austere. Some thought him too authoritarian, with reason. Some thought he should have been given more priority to the family, perhaps. Although I knew he had five children, a daughter and four sons. About the daughter, he said, wherever we drew the line, she was outside of it. The five sons were fine gentlemen. And by the way, a lot of them attended school here. There were those, and it could be alleged that he did not give enough priority to his family. Some thought him humorless. Now I'll tell a little story, and that will illustrate a number of these points. I had grown a mustache. And everybody hated my wife most of all. I must have been having a middle life crisis or something. And anyway, I had the mustache. It didn't do me any good, and I shaved it off when I was on a trip. And I came home, and my family hadn't noticed it. Ori came to my desk, and we transacted our little bit of business. He turned around to leave, and then he spun around again and came back, and came to me. And with a smirk on his face said, "Was it gone or did I just wish it?" He was observant. And he was conservative in his use of words. He could say a lot with very little. So, and I, in my preparation, was assuming that I would be speaking mostly to people who had been born since he died. So this may not be as appropriate, but I want to conclude for and addressing this especially to the students. When you walk by this monument, as hundreds will, or under these flags, as hundreds will in the course of a day, be reminded of the man whose life is honored here. Recall the words of Mother Teresa, who said, "One person can change the world." Then throw back your shoulders and say, "I am that person, God helping me." Thank you.
Thank you, Edgar, for those meaningful words from your personal experience. They add life to our understanding of who Ori O. Miller was. Thank you. And let me also express appreciation to Lee Yoder, to Gloria Rhodes, to Susanna Lepley, and the many others who have helped to bring us to this moment. This Hall of Nations reflects the mission and values of Eastern Mennonite University in a variety of ways. For many decades, students have come to EMU from around the world, and these flags will be a symbol of our hospitality to them in the future. We've already heard some stories of current international students noticing these flags. One, I understand, was proud to see the flag of Kenya, but another one noticed that his or her flag was not yet displayed. So as you have understood, there is still opportunity to respond to that person's concern. Mennonite colleges, and particularly our sister institution, Goshen College, who took the first opportunity to establish what they call SST. We followed soon after with our cross-cultural program, but Mennonite colleges have been national leaders in promoting the value of cross-cultural studies for our North American students. We are committed to the idea that a well-educated student should have had significant interaction with those of other cultures if they are prepared to express values and peace building and sustainability and service. Would you now please join me in a prayer of dedication? God, we have gathered this weekend to celebrate the life and the legacy of Ori O. Miller. His deep commitment to your church, to the cause of meeting human needs around the world, and his efforts in peace building and mission have inspired us. Our world at the beginning of the 21st century is facing monumental challenges that threaten to overwhelm us. And at the same time, we are energized by the commitments of our students who are poised to be the leaders for this generation. Grant to them a deep and abiding sense of purpose and a passion to offer their gifts for the common good. May these flags be a daily reminder of your love for all your creation, for people created in your image all around the globe. Strengthen each of us for the calling on our lives to love and to serve. Amen.